Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
In this Truth and Movies, Jennifer Lawrence gets Bolshie in Cold War ballet intrigue, Red Sparrow. Fantastic Woman, Daniela Vega lost in translation in Chilean drama of gender and identity, and Die Hard as Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams stage a board meeting with a difference in Game Night. All that plus King of New York, walking in the Big Apple with this week's Film Club. It's Truth and Movies, a Little White Lies podcast. And today's Truth and Movies features the vocal talents of David Jenkins.
Hi there.
Hello, David. And also Elena
Hello.
Lazic.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well. I haven't seen you in ages.
I know.
And you've just come back from Berlin.
Yes. I was there for the festival for a week. So I didn't see Isle of Dogs, but I saw quite a bunch of films.
Did you see Hannah Woodhead there?
Yes, I did.
Okay, because she was raving about... Oh, you did? Oh, nice. Yeah, she was raving about Isle of Dogs last week here on Truth and Movies. What did you see that you were particularly blown away by?
I don't know if there were many films I was really blown away by. I was more kind of pleasantly surprised by the general level of the films, except the films in competition, which I thought were, most of them, quite bad.
Oh, really? Yeah. What about the prize winner?
I thought that was the worst film I saw. It's called Touch Me Not, and my review...
Touch Me Lot?
Touch Me Not.
Oh, Touch Me Not.
Do Not Touch Me.
Big difference there.
Exactly. Yeah. And, I mean, I really didn't like this film, and most people I know didn't either. And my review will be up on the website very soon.
Crikey. Is it scathing?
Yes.
All right. So why do you think it won the prize? What is it, first of all?
It's a movie where you have a woman and she has problems with intimacy. Like, she doesn't like touching people. So basically, like, she tries to get over that by having therapy sessions. And what's really cringe about the film is you have these fake therapy sessions shown for the film. And I can't get past that, first of all. But also, there are just loads of, like, really problematic things where with people with disabilities that are just shown on screen talking about their disabilities. And then you also have people with, like, mental disabilities who cannot give their consent, obviously, and it's just really, really horrible. But the film is also really shallow about, like, oh, sexuality, is it weird? So it just recreates the taboos around sex and nudity that if you're going to the Berlinale, if you watch art house films, you do not have taboos around sex. So it's just really weird because you watch it like, okay, I know there's nothing shocking about sex. Why are you making a 2-hour movie about that? It's just, like, quite infuriating.
Crikey. You've been up to Glasgow meantime, David.
Yes, I had a charming time in Glasgow.
Did you?
One of the things I was up there for, which was super fun actually, was there was a screening of the film Dawn of the Dead by our old friend George A. Romero, and it was held in a shopping centre with zombie actors milling about, making kind of groaning noises.
How could you tell?
Exactly, it's the consumerist nightmare writ large.
Right.
But yeah, they do loads of kind of fun things like that. Apparently, like a few nights previous to that, they did organise a screening of Die Hard in the top floor of a tower block.
Ooh.
If you got the tickets for it, you'd go along, and then they had a kind of New Year's party on the ground floor, and then quote unquote terrorists would like come in and take you to the top.
Right.
You seem pretty shocked at that.
Imagine if real terrorists had struck during that party, how confused everyone would have been. And that's the premise of one of this week's movies.
It really is, yeah.
It really is.
But, you know, the Glasgow folks know what they're doing.
They do,
it's a cracking festival.
All right. Here's a quick email a lengthy one, actually. I say cricket. It's actually a lengthy email from the numb waiter who touches on all sorts of things. Why Hannibal is better than Silence of the Lambs. I personally think Manhunt is better than both.
Yeah. Oh, I don't like Manhunter at all. Sorry.
Oh, no, no worries.
That's the story for
I'm one of
day.
Those people.
Not even Brian Cox as Hannibal Lecter, which is surely the definitive Hannibal Lecter. Really?
I think it's, I don't know, I really love Michael Mann, like I love Heat and stuff, but I thought that movie was like, made me really, really reconsider.
You love serial killer movies
I
as
do.
Well. So.
Really?
But this I don't is... love that one at all. Yeah. I just can't
What's your
it.
Favourite serial killer movie?
I mean, I think Silence of the Lambs is actually up there. Uh-huh. I think it's amazing.
Okay. Num Waiter says, Hollywood loved Lambs as well. I gave it 5 Oscars. Best Picture, Best Screenplay, Best Actor, Best Actress and Best Director. The last film before Lambs to manage that feat was... Num Waiter would like us to fill in that blank. Do you know what the last film... My usual answer on any of these things is Terms of Endearment. I wonder if it might be Terms of Endearment.
Or Out of Africa. They're the two that I'm always like... People like them in the 80s, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, unless, Elena, you know the answer to that.
I do not, sorry.
Okay. So I'll just move on, Num Waiter, to your next thing, which is a list of nominations for Film Club. Cool Hand Luke, in which Paul Newman plays a Christ-like character, says Num Waiter. It's not a reading I've previously seen, but one that I'd be very happy to explore the film with. A True Romance, which I'd love to see again. Fire Walk With Me, which I'm quite happy not to see again. Eyes Wide Shut, ditto. I don't know how you feel. Elena, there was a gasp there. You were a big fan of Fire
So
Walk.
I've not actually seen the first two, but I love Eyes Wide Shut.
Yes.
I think it's one of the best Christmas films and one of the
best
films.
I mean, it's the perfect weather now
perfect
for
weather.
Eyes Wide Shut. Is that a Christmas film?
Yeah.
Well, it's set at Christmas.
Okay.
And just, you know, the themes of...
Sex
hating
parties.
Your wife and stuff like that. It's great.
Okay.
You know, anxiety.
All right.
Really good.
This epic email continues with a final point. The cinematic universe, Num Waiter says, that I would most like to inhabit, because this was something that came up a couple of weeks ago, which movie you'd like to live in the world of. Num Waiter says Boogie Nights or Buggy Night.
Buggy Nights.
Buggy Nights. Because we've been called out on a printer. What do you think about that, Elena?
Well, I've actually not seen Boogie Nights. This is something that people are really mad at me about.
So basically, he's saying that he wants to live in a world of hardcore pornography.
Where after a lot of heady disco fun and some seriously hairy situations, nearly all the porn protagonists come out on top.
Oi.
Says Num Waiter. I'm not going to pass any comment on that at all. Do you have a movie that you would like to live in, David?
I would like to live in the movie My Neighbour Totoro. By Miyazaki, which is like a kind of kids' animation film where there is kind of some scintilla of joy in the world.
Okay.
And, equally, and little furry woodland creatures.
I wouldn't mind being in a Brad Bird film.
Oh.
Yeah. Could be one of the Mission Impossible ones or one of the rather charming animations that you used to knock out.
The Iron Giant.
I love The Iron Giant.
Yes.
It's quite a stressful world.
That one is, yeah. I'd be maybe more towards the Incredibles than that. Elena?
I can't really think of one.
Okay, don't worry. Hey, if you'd like to take part in all this email fun, listeners, truthandmovies@tcolondon.com is the address. You can find us on Twitter @LWLies, or there's the Facebook page or the comment section on the Little White Lies website. Next, let's have a look at our first film of this week's releases. It is Red Sparrow. Red Sparrow. Ballerina Dominika Egorova, played by Jennifer Lawrence, is recruited to Sparrow School, a Russian intelligence service where she's forced to use her body as a weapon. But her first mission targeting a CIA agent threatens to unravel the security of both nations. Here is Matron, played by Charlotte Rampling, explaining the lay of the land.
From this day forward, you will become sparrows, weapons in a global struggle for power. Every human being is a puzzle of need. You must learn to intuit what is missing, become the missing piece, and they will give you anything. Take off your clothes. Your body belongs to the state. Since your birth, the state nourished it. Now the state asks something in return. You must learn to sacrifice for a higher purpose. Push yourself beyond all limitation and forget the sentimental morality with which you were raised.
Okay, now, there's three of us here. Only one of us, Elena, has seen this film, and it's you.
Yep.
Should David and I rectify that situation?
I don't think it's a very good films, I think it's quite interesting, the things it tries to do and what it is. So first of all, you think it's going to be Atomic Blonde, so like really visual, thrilling movie with spies and action scenes. And there are a few action scenes, but it's also just a 2-hour, 19-minute movie about spies. And it's mostly about people talking and people like betraying each other. And we never know whose side is she on. Is she with the Russians or is she with the Americans? And it's a lot of dialogue and it's a lot about her experience and what she's thinking. And so it's really quiet and it's not like visually insane. It just looks like Russia. So it's quite amazing to see Jennifer Lawrence like in those like landscapes with those buildings that look very Russian and not like in America or something. It's quite interesting.
I assume from the name, the fact that Jennifer Lawrence was in it and she plays a Bolshoi ballerina, that it would be something quite
spectacular. It's a very serious film. There's no moments of like comic relief. It's not, for example, one of those like ironic action films like Hitman's Bodyguard at all. It's like very, very serious. It feels quite old school, actually, in that way. But what's interesting, I guess, is that it takes the position, obviously, of a woman. And it's a woman who's Russian. And when she gets recruited into that school, she's told that she has to sacrifice herself completely. And she manages to avoid that and to stand to not give herself over. Mostly it's her body. So there's a lot of sexual violence in the first half of the film, which is quite upsetting and just kind of weird that they show it that way. But she manages. It's about this woman who basically, she is questioning whether she wants to save the Russians because of all those notions of how she has to sacrifice herself. And it's obviously not fair. Like, the men don't have to sacrifice themselves in the same way. So it's quite interesting in that way, but it just kind of long and quite like repetitive and boring, because then it's like, who does she betray? Does she betray him? Does she betray him? And it's just a bunch of like reversals like this that are quite monotonous, and you never really feel emotionally engaged with her, which is kind of a shame because you feel like that would be what you want to do.
Yeah, sort of just Tinker Tailor Soldier Sparrow almost.
Yes, yeah, pretty much.
I didn't have high hopes, I must admit, on account of the fact that the director is Francis Lawrence, who worked with Jennifer Lawrence, no relation, I'm thinking.
No, I checked.
Okay, on the Hunger Games movies, the first of which was a very decent cinema experience, but the last one was that month's worst film I ever saw when I saw it. Did you ever see Mockingjay Part 2?
I gave up on the second one. Yeah. After the second one was just exactly the same as the first, but half as good, I was just like, there's nothing more for me here.
But, I think I only saw the first one, but ages ago.
There's this kind of little subgenre of films, which I don't know what you'd call them, but they're like American films about Russia, which kind of tap into the sort of the relationship between the two countries. And they're always called like Red something. So you have like Red Heat, which is about Arnold Schwarzenegger as a Russian cop who goes to America, and Red Dawn, which is like Russians
invading
Midwest, America. Yeah. I mean, what's the film's attitude to Russia in this film?
Oh, Russia doesn't come looking really good at all.
It rarely does in these films.
There's a line in the film that kind of sums up the attitude to the film where someone's like, I always wonder why Russian women look so good and older men look like crap in Russia. And that kind of sums up, like, it's very full of like those cliches. I don't think there are any good Russian characters, like, pretty much.
So you can tell that it's an American film.
Yes, you can tell. I mean, I don't know if it's shot in Russia, but it's, like, really not positive towards Russia at all.
Mm.
And not even towards, like, the awesome spies, because the spies, they are treated like dirt by their bosses. So it's, like, it's very grim.
Are the ballet scenes convincing, at least?
They're okay, because I think one of the ballet dancers that we see is the actual ballet dancer who was actually in Murder Orient Express.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it's... I didn't check that. I'm pretty sure it is.
Okay.
Like, I mean, he looks the same. And he's just playing a ballet dancer in the film, so he's convincing.
Bingo. Yeah. But she looks like a ballet dancer, does she?
She's fine, yeah. Okay. And I mean, it's only one scene. Like, we don't see her much doing it.
Okay.
I think it's interesting that her career has taken a bit of a sort of... Mm. You know, she's doing these quite extreme adult films now.
I think she's a very... I'm always like, even Mother, which I hate, I think this movie's horrible. I think she's amazing in it. Like, I always love watching her in films. So
I loved Mother.
Well.
Yeah.
Well.
Curious, isn't it? But I do enjoy watching her.
I think she's really good. Even in that film, in Red Sparrow, she's very convincing. I mean, except all the whole thing with the accents. Everyone in the film is doing Russian accents, even though they're not Russian.
Uh-huh.
The accents are not convincing, and some of them do them more than others, and so some of them give up after a while. But you don't really, I mean, I don't really care about that.
Okay. Her next picture is going to be another David O. Russell affair. Oh. They previously did Silver Linings Playbook and then
Joy.
Joy, but there was another one in between. I wasn't on board that whole Joy thing.
Oh, they did American Hustle.
American Hustle, which again I thought was wildly overrated.
I didn't like American Hustle. No.
Okay,
but Joy.
Still haven't seen it.
Joy is, I think, underrated.
Joy, do you think?
Nice.
Yeah, I really like it.
All right, Elena, it's just you for scores, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I mean, Anticipation. I don't know, like 3.
Uh-huh.
Because, well, I don't know. I mean, it looked like Atomic Blonde, but then the trailers don't, so I was intrigued, but not wild about it. Enjoyment, I don't know, like between 2 and 3 because it's quite boring. And I mean, in the end, it's actually quite sexist. Like, I mean, they do all those like comments about like sexual violence and power dynamics, which I think are a bit forced, and the film still does get away with a lot of stuff. So like, yeah, between 2 and 3, and in retrospect, yeah, 2, 3. But still, I would give it a little like bonus because it's quite interesting that this film exists at all. It's not like anything we see now. It's not like the most explosive action film that's coming out. Not everyone's going to rush to the cinema to see it. It's kind of a niche audience, I guess, that could go see that. But yeah,
I don't know. So. It's quite a big thing with Jennifer Lawrence and that whole kind of spy thing. I think a lot of people...
But it's really dark and grim.
Yeah,
and
but you only find that until they've locked you in the cinema, though.
I don't know. I mean, even the trailer doesn't look like...
The cast is very impressive. Charlotte Rampling, Joel Edgerton, Kieran Hines, Jeremy Irons... Jolie Richardson.
Yeah, Jolie Richardson plays her mom.
Oh, really?
Russian.
Huh.
Really weird.
That is curious.
I mean, she's fine. She's convincing. It's just when you know it's Jolie Richardson, it's a bit like, oh, okay.
Well, from hearing your review, I would say my anticipation is still probably about 3.
Right.
Because I think it could
if
go
you have
either
2
way.
2 hours 30 to spare, and you're a bit interested in Jennifer Lawrence's career and this weird movie, then go see it.
There you go, a ringing endorsement from Elena. Next up, we'll find out what you'll think of A Fantastic Woman, Un Mujer Fantástico. Marina, a transsexual woman who works as a waitress and moonlights as a nightclub singer, has a relationship with an older man, but when he suddenly takes ill, she's faced with hostility from his family and the world at large. David, this movie's got wondrous reviews. How did you find it?
Oh, man, I wish you hadn't said that.
Ah.
I'm maybe not so on board with the sort of general consensus towards this movie, to be honest. I actually saw it in Berlin the previous year, where it was kind of touted as one of the big films. I don't think it ended up winning any prizes in the end, which again was another sort of disappointing move from the Berlin jury. It's fascinating in that you've got that it's a film that centres on this trans woman in Santiago. And, yeah, she's in this relationship with an older guy and he suddenly dies in the first scene, has a heart attack and dies. And it's about his legacy, it's about his will, it's about where his property goes and how much was she a part of his life.
Mm.
Which is, you know, I think quite an interesting setting because it is, you know, it's relevant now. It's a discussion point that even in America now with questions about, you know, bathrooms, it's like, you know, which they seem to love to have, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, how do we make those decisions? So,
well, specifically, it's her right to grieve and her whole identity and whether that almost ceases to exist because she doesn't fit into one gender or another.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which I thought was a really interesting subject, but I didn't actually find the film that interesting. And I think for me, one of the issues was that because it happened so early on, the bereavement, the kind of defining event in the whole momentum of the plot, I never really got too emotionally connected to her before this became a film about her kind of ploughing her way through an incredibly hostile environment. So it's just, it's a film about a woman frowning with lots of people being relentlessly quite unpleasant to her, which was, you know, upsetting and sad that that clearly is the situation for people in her position. But emotionally, it didn't really help me to connect with her.
I think that was interesting, actually, because I had the same. I wasn't really emotionally connected to her, just in the sense I don't like when people are suffering.
Mm.
I was that way. I was, but not like the way you would expect. But I thought that was quite interesting because then you got to find out stuff about her through what she did, like the way she deals with people attacking her. You're like, oh, she must have had a long history of having to do this, and she worked out ways to avoid being hurt. She worked out what she cares more, like does she care more about replying to those horrible people who are insulting her, or does she care more about her own not being beaten and stuff? Mm. And so she just walks, she just goes away. And the way she's so strong in the sense that these horrible things happen and she knows that she doesn't want to cry right now and be sad right now because she's alone and she won't be able to do it properly until she manages to like actually be with to the funeral and stuff. I just thought that that just showed so much of like her own understanding of what she deserves. And it was really moving in that way because it was very powerful the way she didn't have to say anything or to do anything, to just actually like spell out those things, but you can feel them through her acting, which is amazing. And just the way the film is constructed, it's really like she will not stop fighting until she gets to have a proper grieving moment, and I thought that was quite powerful.
For me, I never quite reached that cathartic moment, I guess.
My issue with the film is you've got this really interesting character and unique in some ways in that it's the decision to focus on her rather than him and, you know, the way round that the story has gone. Like, firstly, I felt that the film is just relentlessly asking you to pity this person rather than actually relate to them. Like, you just get a lot of sort of generic evil people who are very single shade. They're just set in their ways. There is no kind of like sense of acceptance. They're just awful, bigoted people. And there's just kind of this relentless parade of them. By the end, you kind of start to feel like, well, there doesn't feel anything really specific about this situation. What if it had been like just, you know, a woman or, you know, someone else who was oppressed, you know, like a person of colour or something? You know, it felt like a character going through a very sort of standardised bullying procedure. Mm. But I totally get what you're saying about, you know, it's more about her kind of defence tactics that she's built up over the years. And, you know, I do like the idea that what you're seeing in this film is a kind of fragment of a life which actually speaks of much more. I mean, there is this kind of like question about there was a plan for them to go on holiday and it's kind of scuppered by him dying. And, you know, that old chestnut. But there's a really, I found very corny ending where it's a kind of like, almost like Pulp Fiction's what's in the suitcase kind of moment, you know, that just was like, why is this even here? But
I thought there were loads of really corny things in the film.
Like the bit when she turns on the radio and it plays Natural Woman.
Yeah. And like, and I understand that that's some, I mean, that is quite a weird choice to make and it can make you feel like it's a big cliche. But I thought that was part of like, the wild, like, really energy and, like, sense of total acceptance of the film where she's like, I have the right to listen to that song. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's a bit cheesy, but I really like it. It makes me feel that way. And I have the right to have this really intense, like, fantastic sequence. I mean, fantastical mm-hmm. fantasy sequence with, like, glitter and stuff. And I thought it was, I didn't think it was meant, or I didn't perceive it as a way to reduce this transgender woman to just, oh, she feels like a real woman. Like, no. I thought it was really, like, about her, about this just wild energy and, like, she just wants to do that. And I thought it was really, like, really beautiful, actually.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
In a very weird way. Like, you're just watching, you're like, wow. I guess this is weird, but also kind of amazing. I don't know.
One of my major bugbears, I think it might be yours as well, movies that have songs that are obvious, like, comments on the action.
But like this one was so obvious that I felt it was on purpose.
Well, I believe I'm right in saying that in Little White Lies, Headquarters, that any London film that begins with London Calling is high.
Oh,
on
of
that
course,
list.
Yeah, London Calling in Atomic Blonde was pretty awful.
Oh, yes.
When they go to London and then London Calling plays.
There was another bit in this film which I felt I could see a little bit the hand of the director wandering into frame, was when she's walking along in
the mirror.
These two men are carrying a distorting mirror and stop right in front of her so that... But it was quite nice when the mirror then disappears and suddenly the screen changes without a cut because the mirror's... But anyway, David, what marks do you give A Fantastic Woman?
I'd probably give it Anticipation 4 because director Sebastian Lelio, his previous film is a film called Gloria, which is a really nice film. I don't know if you saw it. I had sort of high expectations for this one, so... But yeah, I'd probably go 4-3-3. I mean, it had some nice stuff in it, but it just didn't quite... I wanted more from this story, this setup, this character as well. And it just didn't really deliver. And maybe like 2 in retrospect.
Yeah. Elena?
I didn't know about the director before. So, and I saw the Berlinale just kind of like because it was there. So Anticipation, I don't know, maybe 3-4 because it looked like an interesting story. Enjoyment between 3 and 4 because it was still a very odd experience. I didn't really know what to do with the way I felt about it. And in retrospect, maybe I will go between 3 and 4 again because I actually want to see it again because I'm curious because there have been so many people commenting on how the film is like just not okay in the way it shows like transgender people and the cliches and stuff. And obviously, well, I was
complaining
thinking
that it was a cliched.
Yeah, there's that. It's like obviously made by someone who doesn't really care about transgender people and doesn't really understand the experience. I'm open to discussions, so I would like to see it again, just in the light of the stuff. So I'd like to see it again to just see what I.
There's actually a
different.
Really interesting review of the film on a website called The Nashville Scene. Mm. They've run a review of the film by a trans woman, and it's really fascinating to read because it's kind of picking up on a lot of interesting detail.
Would you say it's fascinating to read before you see the film or see the film and then?
See the film and then okay. Read it, yeah.
All right. Or the other options is don't, of course. My anticipation, it would be three, and then I think two and two. I feel a bit guilty about saying that because it's obviously a very sad story and a topic that can't get enough exposure, but yes. Hey, let's see how our next movie fares. Game Night. Game Night is a suspense comedy about a group of uber-competitive friends whose game night turns into a real-life murder mystery as a simulated reality game staged as if it was a matter of life and death. Turns out to be just that. Here's a moment when Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams, as the games-playing couple at the heart of the movie, try and beat Jason Bateman's charismatic brother, Brooks, played by Carl Chandler.
Come on, Max. Right. And kick it up. Oh, this is easy. Annie, the famous actor that we met at the airport about 8 years ago.
Who?
Only actor we've ever met at an airport who's famous.
Bobby Flay?
Not an actor. This fellow was in front of us at the Sbarro. We were wondering why he wasn't in the first class lounge.
Oh, yes, yes. Who was that?
God damn it.
Max, there's a whole room of people to help you out here.
Use us.
Good point. He was an Incredible Hulk.
Eric Bana.
Other one.
Mark Ruffalo?
Other one.
Lou Ferrigno.
Primal Fear.
Richard Gere never played the Incredible Hulk.
Time.
Ed Norton.
Primal Fear.
Elena. It was directed by the team of John Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein, who were co-writers on Horrible Bosses. And you can see that kind of lineage in this film. Is that fair?
Well, I haven't seen Horrible Bosses, but okay. I know it stars Jason Bateman. Right?
That's true. Yeah.
And all Jason Bateman films are the same. So
that's not true. But I thought this one actually was surprisingly good-natured and well-meaning.
Uh-huh.
And I was quite pleased by that.
Yes.
I think at the beginning, before you get so the story is we do this game night, and then turns out someone, the brother Brooks, played by Carl Chandler, who is one of my favorite people in the world. I love him. Coach Taylor, he's the best.
Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights. Oh, right, okay.
He's also absolutely gorgeous, and I wish he was my dad. He's amazing. So this film, well, that's the ambiguous relationship,
right?
We don't know. He's just so perfect.
Yeah.
And so in the film, Carl Chandler Brooks stages a special game night where he's staging this elaborate thing where one of them is going to be captured by some bad guys and then the cops are going to come and they all have to solve the mystery, but it's fake. And so what happens after a while is that obviously there are real kidnappers who come and take Carl Chandler away. And the humor comes from this contrast between those regular people being thrown into this action movie situation. And that's very funny. I think all the jokes after this happens are really, really funny. And like, when I watched the trailer, I asked David, can I review this film? I think it's hilarious. But all the jokes before that, I thought were a bit weak.
Now, this
and
is
I
interesting.
Was kind of, I was kind of like,
so you found the second
scared.
Half of the movie funnier than the first?
Yes.
For me, it was the inverse.
Wow.
The humour in the first half, and especially when there's that kind of period of dramatic irony where the characters think they are in a staged environment and are acting with the kind of wild bravado of people who think they're just playing some kind of role-playing game, but are actually in deadly danger. That bit, I thought, was particularly piquant.
Yes, and that, and what's immediately after that as well, but just all before that, literally everything before, so with the funny neighbour played by Jesse Plemons.
Who's brilliant,
who is
no?
also in Friday Night Lights, so he's the reunion. But anyway.
Landis.
I thought all that bit was not funny at all, and I was
really
scared.
I thought he was hilarious.
Oh, Jesse he was hilarious Plemons. Afterwards, but like, yeah, he's amazing.
That first scene with him and the dog.
Yeah.
It's just
masterful.
I was like, oh my God, this is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Plemons
the first
was,
ever scene.
Yeah, oh God, where they first see him.
I
it was hilarious
funny.
And terrifying.
Yeah, I didn't...
See, I think the thing
weird.
Is, you might not be a game nerd or a very competitive quiz person. And also, you might not have freaky neighbours. And I tick all those boxes.
Right.
So for me, the first hour, which is very much making jokes, playing, riffing on those kind of attitudes and those kind of social awkwardnesses, if that's a word.
Have you had a relationship built on a mutual love of board games? I mean, it's a classic scenario we can all relate to. You know?
Right. I think the central conceit of this film is brilliant. And while it stays in the parameter of that conceit, I thought it was truly excellent. And I'm slightly perturbed about how I'm going to rate it now, because a film that starts off a bit iffy and then gets good, you can recommend. But one that you really enjoy the first hour of and then it kind of tails off, I'm not sure whether you still can say go and see
it. You can say just walk off after an hour.
Walk off after an hour. Yeah.
Well, so you liked the end but not the beginning. You liked the beginning, not the end. I was like, I liked little fragments all the way through.
Okay, well, that's nice.
So like, I liked individual scenes only. Especially, I mean, Plemons, I thought, was just like, give this guy a spin-off movie because this is incredible.
He's an amazing actor as well.
It's weird because I'd seen him in a bunch of stuff but never seen him do something like this before, where he's kind of he's always like that guy in the background and he's never really kind of part of the central drama. Whereas this, it was like he was kind of commanding the screen when he was on it. Jason Bateman was basically doing Jason Bateman as he does, and if you like that, then, you know, fine. But I actually thought Rachel McAdams was really funny.
Yes.
There's a sequence which involves a kind of, I guess you'd call it a back alley medical procedure after a sort of snafu. And she's kind of trying to do this thing that she's reading up on, like Wikipedia, about how to perform this, quite a major operation, I think it would be. And it's really well done. It's like a kind of innocence that really harks back to like the sort of classic era of Hollywood. Like,
it's like real honesty in her acting.
It's a very kind of screwball-y performance. And I thought she was really good. Mm. All the side characters as well, their friends, like, acquitted themselves.
Yeah, the Denzel Washington joke, hilarious, no?
Oh, yes.
Oh, the Denzel Washington thing was very funny. But by the end, I kind of thought that, you know, that idea of like, is it a game? Is it not? I mean, I almost wish that the ball hadn't dropped as early as it did.
And that's because there's a moment in the film where Jason Bateman observes of something, pick a tone. And it was a funny line at the time, but I think it kind of applies to the movie because they set themselves up, and the way that the titles are done, they use a lot of tilt shift pictures to kind of set up this notion of the whole story being essentially a game. But it's almost like halfway through they just start making up their own rules, and whilst it exists within the original rules, I thought it was better. Having said that, we all clearly really enjoyed this film. So
I think there were so many scenes and jokes that were really, really good, and I think I want these people to make more films because I think it's like there are little mistakes in the film that I think, oh, you could fix that, whatever. But I think it's so promising for more. It's kind of a different kind of American comedies. It's not snarky in the way that so many other comedies are, and it's just really refreshing.
Okay.
So I'm really excited if they make another comedy like that.
All right, you should see Horrible Bosses then, because you probably...
Yeah, I wasn't that taken with Horrible Bosses, and I think that the Bateman low point for me was Identity Thief. I don't know if you ever caught that one. That was pretty bad. But I'm a massive Arrested Development fan, so he is a kind of... He'll always have a pass from me.
It's probably the second greatest TV show, not after Friday Night Lights. So to have them together on one screen is a real treat.
Yeah. The cast is crazy. It's like so many of my interests. Sharon Horgan from Catastrophe, she's incredible. And I was so happy that she was there. Everyone should watch Catastrophe, by the way. It's a British TV show.
All right then, Elena. What numbers?
Anticipation, I would like go 4 because I was really excited about it. Enjoyment, I would say 3 because I was quite taken aback at the beginning. I thought it was really like not very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And in retrospect, I will say 4 because there aren't many films that me love that much. Like, I was by myself with no friend and, like, laughing by myself. It was great. And I'm just really excited that it exists and that there are going to be more, maybe be more films like this.
The idea of a sequel has been mooted.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that. Sorry.
My anticipation would be very low because actually, like, maybe the ones or the twos, because I saw the trailer for this and it was like, I just had no idea what was happening. Like, what? Because they've tried to force the whole film into the trailer, and they pretty much do.
Yes, and all the best jokes in the trailer, so if you can avoid watching
the trailer.
And because
it's such a sort of, and then this happens, it's a complex setup, but they've tried to sort of like boil it down into a nutshell for the trailer, and it just like, it makes it look like 10 films have been like welded together.
But then
it was a 3-star, I wouldn't go so far as to say it was good, but I think I had an enjoyable time there. I'd literally forgotten it by the time I'd sort of stood up and put my hat and coat on. So
yeah, not a bad thing.
In the moment, fine. So in retrospect, probably 3 as well. It's a film that I think wouldn't be harmed if you had a few port and lemons beforehand.
One of the early editions of Truth and Movies, one of the tests of a good movie was whether you would watch it on a plane or not. And I think this would be perfect for watching
perfect
on a plane.
Yeah. Short haul.
Yeah.
Boom. Yeah, very good time on a plane.
Yeah, nice. Okay. Yeah, I'll go along with that. I think anticipation high for me. Watching it mostly high. Retrospect high. Nice.
Great.
Go and see it. Next up, Little White Lies Film Club presents King of New York.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A drug kingpin, played by Christopher Walken, is released from prison and seeks to take control of the criminal underworld in the Big Apple in order to give back to the community. Here is Christopher Walken spelling it out to a member of the criminal fraternity.
I got your message, Ollie.
You stupid son of a bitch.
You running games here? I want to play.
Sure, fine, play. Bring your friends.
Nah, I want to play with Ollie.
Come on, let's go, will you?
Junk deals. Blackjack, house out.
You got some balls coming here.
Okay. From here on, nothing goes down unless I'm involved. No blackjack, no dope deals, no nothing. A nickel bag gets sold in the park. I want in. You guys got fat while everybody starved on the street. It's my turn.
Now, we've not got long, and there's plenty to say about this film, so should we just crack straight into what listeners thought about it?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Okay, I'm going to go for this sort of long one at the top then by Angus Davies. Sorry, Davies. Be sure
to
pronounce.
Again.
Yes, Angus Davies. Interesting, this one. Kind of sort of hard to pin down or decide whether I liked it or not. I thought it was a treat for the opening scenes of Walken's exit from jail, with the closely mic'd footsteps and gravelly hushed dialogue reminding me of the mumble noir world of Robert Altman's The Long Goodbye. What followed thrilled and disappointed in equal measure. I wasn't sold on Walken's crime boss bravado, and Fishburne's hopped up gangster felt forced and unconvincing. Me and Angus, I don't think we can be friends.
The thing you like most about this film is Jimmy Jump.
I mean, Jimmy Jump is, this may sound hyperbolic, but I think he might be the greatest character in the history of narrative cinema.
See, I don't know, if you'd said that at the time, I could understand it, but having seen Lawrence Fishburne in so many films since, to divorce your knowledge of his kind of thespian identity from his performance as this B-boy back then, it's a bit like seeing, I don't know, Patrick Stewart turn up and try and do a grime or something. It just felt wildly out of place and a little bit patronising as well.
I think there is meant to be a kind of larger-than-life element to his character in this film. I mean, just to sort of add some context here, he plays the kind of loyal, not bodyguard, but like first in command of...
Lieutenant.
Let's call him a lieutenant for Christopher Walken's drug lord. And just to add also, the reason why we're kind of talking about this film is because on Little White Lies, we're doing this kind of thing on like the birth of like hip hop in movies.
Oh, yeah.
He symbolizes this. It's like a kind of taking the classic Scorsese gangster movie and fusing it with like hip hop and sort of saying, is this going to be the way forward? Are these sort of
clan is going to have to kind of come together in their kind of criminal endeavors. His performance in this film is like, he's like the best ever Joker. I mean, he's like, none of the people who have played the Joker could ever be as close to how terrifying and how kind of
charismatic
he is as well. There's this amazing scene where he goes, that he's sort of going into this like chicken shop and he's like ordering chicken. And the guy behind the counter sort of tells these kids to get away from the arcade machines. And then he just sort of goes over to the to this old woman with the kids and starts throwing money on the table, goes, yeah, you go play, and he, and peels off notes and gives them to her. And there is a kind of like, you know, it's an incredible performance, and it's just so terrifying. Every time he's on the screen, there is like this promise of hair trigger violence or something going to happen soon.
Okay.
I love it.
He's kind of like the entire film's mood as a person, because the film... I think it's such a weird film. Like, because there are all these bits that... It's like a classic gangster story. Like, Frank White, Chris Walken, just comes out of jail. No, he's not a changed man. He just wants to kill all the other gangsters so he can be the king of New York.
Well, he is changed in that he wants to now go straight, but then he basically has to get all the bad people onto his side
in order to
first.
Get straight. So. Yeah. Anyway, and also just the way it's made, like the editing is crazy, and the dialogue, like everything is so over the top in a funny way. It's just so exaggerated. One scene in the film that happens is Lawrence Fishburne goes to see another gangster and he gives him a suitcase that's supposed to be full of money, I think.
Yep.
And the guy opens the suitcase and it's full of Tampax, and he says, "What is this for?" And he says, "It's for the bullet holes." And you think about it, it's like someone had to go buy like 10 boxes of Tampax to fill that suitcase.
It's true.
Just for that line. And it's just like that kind of sums up the entire film, when you have all those like really over the top things that are horrible but also like really funny because they're so absurd. And that's just, the entire film is that way. So you just watch it and there are so many lines of dialogue or exaggerated things. Like the way Christopher Walken at some point shoots a guy, he just like, he's upset at him, so he just shoots him. And then he talks to the other gangster saying, "Oh, if you don't do what I ask, you're going to be like that." And he just shoots the guy again like 3 times just from a distance, like with such disdain. It's like a video game for them. It's like, it's so amazing.
Well. Anyway, were there any other comments from listeners?
Ian Harris, I think on Facebook, said, "I think easily Ferrara's best work. It is accessible to all, but still holds enough of his cynical outhouse vibe for his hardcore fans. Plus, Walken has rarely been better." I think the thing about the outhouse vibe, cynical outhouse vibe, is very much there. It's just like, there are no really redeemable characters. Everyone's horrible.
That's kind of what I love about it, actually. Film that just exists in this really weird space, in that it's not quite a gangster film, it's not a hip-hop film, it feels like a Western sometimes, it feels like an action movie,
like...
it feels like a really sort of weird contemplative New York art movie.
But also not really contemplative at
all. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, but you have like the Lawrence Fishburne's character who's like loud and brash, and then you have like Walken who's like this kind of, you know, he never smiles, he doesn't really show any emotion, he's just...
Every time he tries to smile, it's just the weirdest thing you've ever seen.
It is just very strange, yeah, but... I just love the fact that it's kind of a film that is super, super, super hard to peg down.
Yeah.
And like the act of trying to peg it down and maybe it kind of eluding you to the end is just, I love it.
I feel that its attempts to be a kind of a gritty urban drama are ultimately undermined by its incredible flamboyance and extravagance.
No, I think that kind of, that's what's amazing about
it,
because it keeps you surprised. If it was just gritty, it would be kind of... like classic and boring, but I think I quite like that. There are bits in the film that it just looks like a Roxy music video because it's so beautiful.
Yeah, or a sci-fi film.
Yeah, and it's just, you don't really know. It's just that there's this insane level of class that Christopher Walken and all these criminals have, but also like they're just so violent and funny and stupid and like crazy. The crazy is like, I don't know of any other word to describe.
I love it for all those reasons.
Exactly.
Right. Any other comments to finish off with?
Bianca B. Gardner, I quite enjoy it. It's a bit of an underrated crime thriller with an excellent performance by Walken. Chris Lawrence, it's been a while since I've seen it. VHS brackets, but I love its rawness. And Mackenzie, bit cheap round the edges, however Walken keeps it interesting enough to get past that.
Right, wow. That was certainly, for me, a left field choice. I wonder what we're proposing for next week's film club.
Well, I believe for next week, in celebration of the Oscars.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm
guessing... Terms of Endearment, is it?
And the best picture is. So we're going to do an Oscar film, and we've asked people to nominate their favourite best picture winner.
All right.
And by something of a country mile, we've landed on the film One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Really? Have you seen that, Elena?
Yeah. Okay. Ages ago.
Yeah.
So we're going to be talking about that next week.
Brilliant. Okay. So, nice one.
Mr. McMurphy, your medication.
What's in the horse pill?
It's just medicine. It's good for you.
Yeah, but I don't like the idea of taking something if I don't know what it is.
Don't get upset, Mr. McMurphy.
I'm not getting upset, Miss Pilbo. It's just that I don't want anyone to try and slip me saltpeter. You know what I mean?
Murphy doesn't want to take his medication orally. I'm sure we can arrange that he can have it some other way. But I don't think you'd like it, Mr. McMurphy.
You'd like it, wouldn't you?
Well, not give it to me.
Good.
Yeah, well, there'll be some Oscar reactions and chat next week as well.
Probably.
Yes. Anna Woodhead is going to be doing the late shift for Little White Lies and offering some
live
commentary of the Oscars. So if you fancy some midnight movie action, then...
And that's at littlewhitelies.com.
Indeed.
Brilliant. Okay. Now, also on the agenda next week are... You Were Never Really Here and Sweet Country, which are coming out that Friday, so we'll be talking about those. Do get watching One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and let us know your thoughts at truthandmovies@tcolondon.com, on Twitter at LWLies or via Facebook. That, though, is it for this edition of Truth and Movies. Many thanks to Elena and to David. This has been a 7 Digital production.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.